It's time for Dodger Baseball.
That's strike three. Dodgers have won it all in 2020.
Mookie Betts
cranks one left field.
They're going to make big signings. They're going to make impact trades. I don't care how many times this team rips my heart out, I'll never stop loving the Los Angeles Dodgers. Think blue, bleed blue, and I'm out.
What's going on, Dodgers Nation? Welcome to another episode of Dodgers Dugout Live. We are Reggie Smith, Mark Grzelanik, Almedo signed, Zach McKinstry, Manny Machado, Kike Hernandez, days away from opening day. We're getting so close, Dodgers Nation. And today is a special day because I have my friend, the great Mr. Jose Mota here joining us. We're going to talk about the shortstop position. What should the Dodgers do at that position? How can they help Gavin Lux get that confidence back? We'll talk some Shohei Ohtani, the Dodgers lineup, the Dodgers rotation, with Yoshinobu Yamamoto. But without further ado, Mr. Jose Mota, thank you so much for joining us here on Dodgers Dugout Live.
Oh, dude, you're counting down, man. Number eight, Reggie Smith and those, man. There's a time when I wore number eight because of Reggie Smith, switch hitter, some power, a little swagger, some fight in him. But boy, good to be back with you here as we count down the days because baseball's coming very soon.
Baseball is in the air, Jose. And this team, they've made headlines all offseason. They're the talk of baseball. They had a historic, a masterclass of an offseason, adding Shohei Ohtani, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Tyler Glass now. But right now, that is not the talk in Dodgerland. The talk is about that shortstop position because heading into this year, it was supposed to be Gavin Lux who was going to have this opportunity to establish himself as the Dodgers' long-term solution at the shortstop position, be that everyday guy. But unfortunately, it just hasn't worked out early on. The throws haven't been there. You've seen some issues with his confidence, it feels like. And just the results were to the point where Dave Roberts, he just ripped the Band-Aid off and went to Mookie Betts as the everyday shortstop. So just first, Jose, what are your thoughts on that decision to quickly pull the plug on Gavin Lux at shortstop so early on in the season?
Well, the Dodgers have followed him and, you know, pretty much screened pretty much his workout throughout the offseason. Robert Dino Evil and the reports that he's giving to them and what they're seeing on video. And they feel pretty confident that he was going to be the guy. I personally, you and many people, I did not feel that comfortable because he's coming off of a major knee injury. To play that position, that requires and just demands so much, it was going to be too much of a load. I was truly convinced about that. I've seen it happen. I remember Chipper Jones when he first came up as a what? Shortstop. What happened? Major knee injury. Then what happened then? Position change. Shortstop takes a toll on you, okay? Nothing against the athletic abilities of Gavin Lux at all. But we know that he has some throwing issues at second base. He kind of got over those. And the work is being put in to get him to be to the next level. But I knew that, you know, it was going to be tough no matter what. The workouts and the aim game between the white lines are two way different things. Now, the issue is because Mookie Betts wanted to play second base, my option would have been Gavin Lux at second base and keep it the way it is and get a shortstop. But then Mookie obviously decides and they decide Mookie's going to be our second baseman. That changes everything now for you. And it's a situation where I'm glad, as you asked, they do it now because Mookie does need to prepare for this. This is not a – I used to play shortstop in the minor leagues for 130, 140 games. This is the major leagues. You are in a staff that's going to require you and expect you to catch a baseball and make some throws and make some plays. And then you are pretty much the captain. I mean, I could only say the name Derek Jeter. Think about Derek Jeter. He was involved in everything that a shortstop was needed to be involved in and beyond. Well, that's going to fall now on Mookie Betts on a lot of things. And we just hope that because he is so athletic, he's willing to do it, which is the main thing here. He is unselfish. It's for the team. But we know that in the long term, it's not going to be as easy as some people think because he's going to go through some, you know, growing pains and things like that, and we hope do not affect his offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring it up. I mean, you're the shortstop. Outside of catcher and pitcher, it's the most important position out there. You're the guardian of the infield. It's not just what you do physically, making plays, making throws. It's also being the leader out there. You have to communicate. You have to talk about it. But what you've seen from Gavin Lux, as far as the opportunities he did get. He got a handful of errors, could have gotten even more than that. But the opportunities that he did get, just from a mechanical standpoint, the way he's not utilizing his lower body, the way his throwing motion looks, just mechanically, what did you see from how he was trying to execute those throws, and how can you correct it?
He can correct those, but it's going to come with time. He cannot speed up. all the time. You cannot do it. Just like you can't slow it down, or you cannot speed it up either. Everything's going to be at the right time when his body is ready for it. And now when you get into game speed, Doug, it is so much different. Now you're reacting to somebody in the mound, your positioning, your first step, that quick twitch, is it there or is it not there? Now, we talk about this a lot when guys go through Tommy John's, so letting go of the baseball at one point, because you got to tell yourself, I just got to think it's not going to hurt anymore. And Gavin Lux still, in my opinion, needs to get over the fact that he is coming and overcome this major knee injury and his hamstring and quad too. So it's not just the knee. It's everything around that knee that requires for him to be in top shape, to be coordinated. And it takes a lot of time. Again, I'll say it. Athletically, he's right there, but you cannot duplicate, replicate, simulate anything that happens when you are playing for fans. You're playing for something, not hitting fungos or not catching fungos and throwing to somebody. Now it counts. And a lot of times in your mind, that has the biggest effect. He could overcome it. It's going to take a lot of practice and repetitions, some failures. But what I saw playing shortstop in spring training was not the guy that we know he can be, because mentally, physically, is not all coordinated yet. And the one thing I do hope it doesn't affect is his confidence. You mentioned this, you know, opening the show, Doug. Once a player's confidence is affected, it is just a downward spiral where it's hard to pick up from and hard to get back from. But overall, he's got the support system, anything that he needs, including people that trust him, he has it, including also his teammates and the staff that know that he can get it done. Now, the Dodgers are in a position where, yeah, he can come to church and die, but you're a collective team.
Yeah. And we're having a little technical difficulty here, but I think we're going to get it back. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you mentioned the athletic ability he does have. He is rangy. He can get to balls. And it feels like it's a combination of a physical, just getting back to being 100%, getting the confidence in his lower body. Because sometimes just because you're back and you are back technically, it doesn't mean that... Wait, what happened? We cut off? Okay, cool. We're going to get Jose Mota back. Here he is. He's coming back here. One second here. There you go, Jose. We lost you for a second. Here, one second. Got a little technical difficulty. There we go. Can you hear us? Can you hear us?
Oh, yeah. I did. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. We lost you for a second.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Just kind of going in and out, but I think you're pretty solid. How's that, Antonio? Okay. Sweet. So, yeah, I think we're solid. But, yeah, I think when you're talking about the just recovery from the injury, I just want to ask you just how much do you think it is physical? How much do you think it is mental? And, of course, there's that Y word, right? The yips. And I know one likes to use that, especially when it comes to a player, because of how that reflects his confidence. But if you look at his Statcast numbers when it comes to his throwing, I mean, he's right up there with Dansby Swanson and Trevor Story and Kyle Farmer. Guys that don't have great arms, but have shown the ability to at least get it done at the big league level. Is it kind of outside the realm to say maybe there's a little bit of yips in there just as far as where his confidence is at?
I mean, it's a word that, people don't want to use it, but...
All right, cool. So we're gonna get back to Jose, and fortunately we're having some connection issues there, so we'll bring him back in just a little bit. So let me just tell him right now, we'll just try to bring him back. Jose, can you hear me now? There we go.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yours is breaking up.
Okay.
Some reason.
All right, Jose. We're going to try to look at this, and thank you so much for joining us. I know you got to run, but thanks, Jose. As always, guys, go follow Jose Mota at JoseMota05, the best in the game when it comes to analyzing Dodger baseball. He's going to be with you all season long on the bilingual broadcast of your Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll check with him in person pretty soon as well. Jose, thank you, as always, for joining us here on Dodger Dugout Live, my man.
You got it. Anytime. Take care.
All right, thanks, Jose. And, yeah, I mean, you heard what Jose said. I mean, this is a player in Gavin Lux that has a lot of talent, a guy that was supposed to be a shortstop for this organization for the long term, but unfortunately, through a combination of just not being right physically, as far as I think he actually is right physically. I don't think that you can say that from a physical standpoint, he doesn't have it. I think that it's more mental, and he's just not engaging that lower body as much as he needs to be able to convert the throws. But how about yesterday, though? Yesterday, you had him in a situation where he's at second base, and he wasn't inspiring very much confidence at second base. You had him sidearming throws. You had errors. You had the pop-up, which, yes, that should be the shortstop's ball. It landed closer to Gavin Lux, and it just feels like where he's at right now, he is almost wishing the ball isn't going to get hit to him, and you don't want to see that, right? I mean, what did Pedro Guerrero say a couple decades ago when he said, look, every time the ball would get hit, I would say, I hope it doesn't get hit to me, and I hope it doesn't get hit to Steve Sachs. You don't want to have that mindset mentality as a defense, but I think really the easy solution is if you do want to move Mookie back to second base in a position where it was supposed to be like, look, okay, Mookie's at second, so he doesn't have as much wear and tear. So he can just continue to dominate at the plate, and for sure, he would be somewhere where, hey, I can go out there and produce and not have to worry about playing a position that is very demanding, like right field, like the shortstop spot, and then you also would preserve him for the postseason. Because I thought that was supposed to be the impetus for everything, right? That we were supposed to have Mookie at second so he can focus on what he does and the most value he provides at this stage of his career, which is at the plate with the stick. So I personally believe the solution ranking right now, if I'm ranking the solutions for how to help Gavin Lux get back to where he needs to be, why not send him down, option him to AAA, and get as many reps as he possibly can? And AAA doesn't even start yet, right? So we're not even there at game actions for AAA. But if you do give him that opportunity, and then you have Miguel Rojas at short, and you have a guy who's a top four defensive shortstop, or you have Kike, or you have Chris Taylor, you move Mookie back to second base where he is going to be permanently. And then when Gavin Lux is ready, you give it another go at the shortstop spot. It does feel like if you want to feel good about something for Gavin Lux, if you want to feel something good about Gavin Lux, is that the fact that, look, they didn't do that, right? They still want his bat in the lineup. They still want him on the field because he can hit close to 300. He provides a speed dynamic towards the bottom of that lineup that's going to help Mookie and Ohtani and Freddie drive in runs. And we're going to work on getting Jose Mota back, by the way. He's changing things up, so if you send me another link, I'll send him a link, Mr. Antonio. So we're working on that. But yeah, look, there is a world where I think he is best served with getting as many reps as he possibly can. And look, if you want to have him at second base, fine. He was an above-average second baseman. He can be an above-average bat. He still can provide value to this team. But as BC points out, it could be seen almost as an extended rehab assignment. I think you could spin this if you're the Dodgers, and you don't have to have Gavin Lux feel like, oh, I didn't make the cut. I didn't make the active roster. I'm disappointed. I'm disappointing the team. No, it doesn't have to be like that. You can still be optimistic about the future of Gavin Lux at that position if you just say, look, he's coming off an extremely serious, a gruesome knee injury. Let's call it what it is. It was a gruesome knee injury, and you're coming back playing a position that's extremely physically demanding, that requires a lot of lateral movement and range, and on top of everything else, you are going on a team that has the highest expectations of any team in the history of Major League Baseball. When you combine all those factors, it shouldn't be that big of a surprise why it hasn't worked out swimmingly so far, why there has been some turbulence and some bumps in the road as he's gotten reacclimated to that position. So, look, this is no slight on Gavin Lux. This is not, okay, let's kick Gavin Lux when he's down. Hey, Gavin Lux, get ready to speak Milwaukee. Get ready to speak OKC. That's not what the point of this is. The point of this is you want to do what's best for this team when it comes to winning baseball games. And I truly believe, and look, Mookie has done some great stuff. I mean, he's been 27 for 31 on easy ground balls so far this spring. He's had some double plays. He has gone 0 for 8 on plays that are considered nearly impossible, which you have a 10% or less chance of probability when it comes to turning those and converting them into outs, right? 0 for 8. So those aren't errors. He does have three errors. Mookie, all those plays that he has errors on are plays that StatCast has given it a 90% chance of converting into a base hit. So basically, a lot of those errors were on hard hit balls that were very difficult plays. But he's not someone that is going to be an above average shortstop. That's not how this works, right? You don't just slide over to short and become Francisco Lindor, right? And become Miguel Rojas and become Willy Adames. That's not how this works. Those guys have been playing that position for a very, very long time primarily, and they're built for it. Mookie is athletic. He's not as athletic as he was 6 or 7 years ago, right? Even his defensive metrics in right field weren't as good as they were. But where is he better now than he was years ago? That's at the plate. That's hitting the baseball. That's hitting line drives. That's lifting the ball. That's hitting home runs. Had a career high with 39 home runs last season. So this does feel a little sunken cost fallacy by the Dodgers with that, okay, you have three more years of team control with Gavin Lux. He's a very young, controllable player that was a former top prospect. You don't want to move off those guys if you don't have to, but guess what? He still provides value. Here's the thing about Gavin Lux. Here's what it boils down to, and here's the rub. If Gavin Lux can hit close to 300, between 280 and 300, and play average to above average defense at second, you continue to roll this out with Mookie Betts at short, and you keep both their bats on the diamond. But what if Gavin Lux struggles? One, that value is going to plummet because teams out there are going to think that he can't hit and then he can't field, right? And then two, what does this mean for your depth and your team moving forward? Because it just makes you wonder, is Mookie Betts someone you want to withstand the rigors of that position for an entire year? I just do not think so. So I just, man, it's pretty wild. So let me get this link ready. You got the Zoom link ready. We're going to give it another try with Mr. Jose Mota right here. And let me know down below in the comments section, what are your thoughts on the Gavin Lux situation? Like I was saying a couple days ago, it's like having a $75 million mansion with Ohtani and Freddie and Betts and Glasnow and Yamamoto, but you don't have the functioning toilet. You're having plumbing issues, and you need to correct that before this season begins. And look, credit to the Dodgers for being out there and being aggressive and saying, okay, we're going to address this right away. We're not going to wait on this. Justin Lama says, trade for Arenado, put Rojas at short, and then sign either Ha-Seong Kim or, look, Ha-Seong Kim's going to be a free agent. That's an interesting possibility. And you also have, how about J.D. Davis with what happened with the Giants, right? I mean, J.D. Davis is not with the Giants anymore, and he's out, and you could go get him. He wasn't able to go back there on a deal worth $6 to $7 million. J.D. Davis could put a third, could move Muncy at second, keep Mookie at short, but that would also defeat the purpose. We got that link? All right, sweet. So let's get this here. It's the same one. That's cool. Yeah, hit up in the podcast. But let's go right here down below. Hey, guys, it's spring training for Zoom as well. But we got the Lux needs to be sent down. Mookie needs to stay at second. Pablo Ramos, I'm with you on that one. I'm with you. Hepatitis C later. J.D. Davis, he's a lead defender, though. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just throwing possibilities out there. Let it play out. His bat will show up, Jason Wesley. And his bat's going to have to show up for him to really be a part of this team's future. And that's what it's going to come down to. And kind of one of the things that I'm a little concerned about is how much pressure does he put on his bat now to be able to accomplish that? We got what? Okay, cool. So yeah, we're going to get Jose Mota back right after the break, guys. So stay tuned. We're talking some more Gavin Lux, more Dodgers lineup, more Yamamoto, Ohtani, all things Dodger baseball. That's coming up next here on Dodgers Dugout Live. What up, Dodgers Nation? D-Mag here. I'm here to remind you that if you have not yet, be sure to subscribe to the number one Dodgers YouTube channel for all latest Dodgers news, rumors, hype videos, interviews, breakdowns, live streams, and more all year long. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. And if you really want to help the channel out, smash that like button. Also, you will not be eligible for any of our giveaways unless you are subscribed to the channel. So all you need to do to be eligible for all of our giveaways is just make sure that you are subscribed. We just gave away a brand new authentic Mookie Betts jersey valued at over $350. And we got tons of giveaways coming this offseason. So be sure to be subscribed so you are eligible to win. And as always, think blue, bleed blue, and please subscribe. And welcome back to Dodgers Dugout Live. If you haven't yet, by the way, definitely subscribe to the channel, the number one Dodgers YouTube channel, getting close to 90,000. I see BC saying 100,000 subscribers this season. Absolutely. But until we hit 90K, we're doing another giveaway. I think we're doing a Tyler Glasnow jersey. So if you want to be eligible for all of our giveaways, all you have to do is comment done down below and make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Got some more comments over here. Nando 390 DMAC. What if Lux needs to a change of scenery? The lights are too bright in LA. So I don't necessarily think that is 100% the case. I will say though, if you compare this season to last season would have been ideal for Gavin Lux to break in at that position. That team didn't have expectations. That team wasn't the World Series favorite along with the Atlanta Braves, right? That team was expected to have a decent year, but most people picked the Padres. It was seen as a rebuild year, a little bit of a reset year while you break in some of these younger players. Unfortunately, though, Gavin Lux got injured, and he wasn't able to take advantage of that opportunity. So would he be better with a change of scenery on a club that had less pressure? Probably. There'd be less pressure on him to go out there and make these throws. But look, this is someone who has had throwing issues for a long time. I mean, he's had him at the minor league level. He had him for certain stretches when he got his opportunity. So it's not like he was an elite shortstop defensively, then got injured. This is someone who has always been an unproven shortstop that has had to do it. But what up, D-Max? Sorry I'm late. What up, BT Fouls? We had hepatitis. See you later. If Kim is cool with 5 years, that would be great. 34 years old at the end of that contract. Yeah, hepatitis. See you later. There's not a lot of shortstops that are available, too. I mean, Willie Adames, Ha-Seong Kim has a $7 million mutual option. Those don't get exercised, so he's going to hit the free agent market once again. And he's a wizard with the glove. And you just don't have that many guys out there at that position. Internally, Sweeney's not going to probably turn into that guy, right? I mean, look, like I said, there's more ace-level pitchers out there than there are shortstops out there that can play this position at an above-average level offensively and defensively. It's very scarce. It does not happen. So that is kind of the issue that they have. So I still think, though, from a roster standpoint, this team can withstand this early on. But, yeah, it's definitely been a tough watch to get it going. But Pablo Ramos, Mookie needs to be at second. Stop messing with this team because of one player. It's a fire take. Roy Miranda, if we can't get Adames, then the next best trade option would be Trevor Story. He still has a few years of team control. I mean, with Trevor Story, that would require a good amount of time to invest in that because that's a ton of money, man. He's a couple years. You get opt into another $50 million. I don't think they love him. Do we have Mota back here? Okay, back. Johnny Guest, I want to believe in Lux, but after a year of rehab, he hasn't come back strong and consistent like the Dodgers need. Sammy Boyce Smith, hey, Brewers, shut up and take our money for Adames. That's a fire take. That's a fire take. So the issue there is, like I said, the Dodgers are operating from a position of not low leverage, of no leverage, okay? Teams out there know that the Dodgers have an issue at shortstop, and just look at the left side of that defense. I mean, I think Rojas would help supplement Max Muncy and his deficiencies, but Mookie, Lux, and Muncy on paper would be around below league average. That's how they would grade. And then you have Freddie Freeman. Hey, like I said yesterday, game two, NLDS, Will Myers at the plate. Dodgers are right there. Bruce Dark Gratter on the mound. Ground ball hit to Trey Turner. He boots it. He doesn't make the play. And what ends up happening? The Padres eventually scored some runs in that inning, and they would end up losing that series. So defense can cost you a series. Defense can cost you a World Series. And especially at a position as valuable as that. We got Michael Carrillo. Trevor Story has a bad arm, too. I pointed that out earlier. Is that, look, Trevor Story's arm, right there with Dansby Swanson's arm, right up there with Kyle Farmer's arm, right? I mean, yes, it's not a good arm, but they found a way to get the job done. So it proves that you can do just that. We got basically the A squad and the lineup tails from BT Fouts. Yeah, let's take a look at this Dodgers lineup because you're starting to see with a couple games left that, hey, it's real. These dress rehearsals are going to end pretty soon, and this Dodgers team is going to take the field for this season. If you look at the starting lineup today, You got Giants at Dodgers, Betts at short, hitting leadoff, then Shohei Ohtani at DH, batting in the two-hole, Freddie Freeman batting third. Then we got, here we go, we got my man Mr. Jose Mota back. He's going to frame him up a little bit, but we got Jason Hayward batting fifth in right, Kike Hernandez in left, then, no, we got Teoscar Hernandez in left, then Kike in center, Rojas at third, Chris Owings at second, and Tyler Glass, now the Dodgers opening day starter on the bump for LA. And Teoscar Hernandez has been hitting the ball extremely hard during spring training. And here we got my man, Mr. Jose Mota back. So Jose, sorry, lost you there for a second. So yeah, just one thing I want to ask you, Jose, is if this is your squad, do you like the idea of Mookie Betts full-time permanently at that shortstop position?
I like the idea right now. It's still a project. I mean, there's no way of hiding the fact that Mookie Betts has never played a full season in the big leagues as a shortstop. He's done it as a minor leaguer, but it's just not the same. We trust, obviously, with our eyes, the athletic ability and the willingness of this player to get it done. But at this point, he becomes the best option. He wants to do it. He's got the ability to do it. And certainly he's surrounded by a lot of good people that are going to make this a lot easier for him in this transition.
Yeah, Jose, before he had played shortstop last season, the most recently he had played it was in 2012 for Low A Lowell against the Auburn Doubledays. Okay, so first of all, I just want to say I'm so impressed that Mookie Betts even able to consider doing that. It's not normal to be able to do that even at a close to league average level, and he's still able to execute that. But when we saw what we did last year in the postseason, he struggled with the bat. Even after August, the bats started to slow down. Do you worry that the rigors of that position, how demanding that is, that could impact him at the plate later on in the year?
You know, the way I know Mookie, this actually might incentivate him even more and motivate him even more, as he says, to be more engaged in some of these plays, because he knows his mind has to be not on fly balls anymore. And, you know, playing the outfield and right field, he might get, say, 3-4 fly balls, busy game, and be involved in cutoffs and ball in the gap and this and that. But there's a different monster now. And I just hope that, because he wants to do it, Doug, is the main thing to me, because he wants to do this. Superstar player has nothing to prove. Those 6 gold gloves in right field. Hopefully this is a factor that propels him into what he says now. He wants to be great. Well, here's his chance to be great. Now, there will be some growing pains, everybody. As you mentioned, 2012, you know how much the position has changed since? Positioning, information, analytics, tendencies, all those things have changed. Your pitchers, your staff, all those things have changed. Things that now he has to almost relearn. It's not just about taking ground balls. It's about being in a position where whatever the graphs say, whatever the spray chart says, whatever analytics say, you can translate that into a language you understand. It makes you an efficient shortstop. Now, let's do this. Let's not expect Mookie to go out there and be a highlight field right away. He's athletic enough to do it, but we'll be very happy, Doug, if he becomes just a very solid routine play maker for the Dodgers, because the staff, that's all they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he just gives us solid at that position and then he puts up anywhere near the numbers he did last year at the plate, you're talking about someone who probably will run away with the MVP in the National League. All these Dodgers fans that are still upset about Corey Seager being on the Rangers, guess what? We didn't really talk about Corey Seager's deficiencies with the glove because of how good he was at the plate. And that's essentially what you could get with Mookie Betts, someone who is an offensively top five player who is solid defensively in a premium position of need. So yeah, look, I give him all the credit in the world. My fear, though, is just the wear and tear and just kind of the long-term solution. If you're trying to look at that position long-term, do you try to find ways this year to address that? Now, my next question to you, Jose, is what do you do with Gavin Lux? Because I think, look, everyone's trying to kind of kick Gavin Lux when he's down and this and that. I'm trying to sit here and say he still provides a ton of value with what he can do at the plate with the stick, batting in the bottom of the lineup, giving you that speed dynamic. He can be an above average second baseman. Do you think that that's a show of confidence saying, look, we don't want you off the diamond. We just want you at a different position, right?
Right, because he's so valuable, and we know what he does in a battle line lineup. I mean, go back to 2022. He hit lefties. He hit a lot of triples. He ran the base as well. I mean, there's no one better. Now that we're going to see Shohei, watch Shohei go first to home. Gavin Lux, to me, I mean, not including last year, but the best Dodger doing that, because the way he cuts the bases, how he loves his speed, how he uses the route to get the home plate for balls hitting the gap. For Gavin, he's got confidence to be built. He's got people to give him confidence. And I'll tell you what, the biggest confidence builder in his position right now is the fact that he's being given the opportunity to play. The worst thing that can happen is that you pull the plug, say, you know, you're going to be maybe now. But to me, beyond all this that we're talking about, I just want to feel that he's fully healthy to get over the barriers and those things that get in your way to say, am I back or not? That is the biggest concern any player can have. We talk about it a lot with pitchers and surgeries, just to say, can I really let it fly and let it go? And that is going to be, to me, the biggest factor. In other words, what the Dodgers are showing now with him is, yeah, you're important. You're going to play. Now, consider this too. Dodgers' best proven shortstop right now, every day. Remember Miguel Rojas.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if at some point this season, you'll see maybe Mookie shift to second base on some days, have Rojas at shortstop, depending on the matchup, the day updates, and all those things. But listen, you do have a piece named Miguel Rojas, one of the best in all the game. And that is also a good feeling and something you can fall back on.
Yeah, and not a lot of teams have that luxury to have that much depth and that many options that can get it done. And, yeah, I think you got lefties on the mound. You could have Mookie at second. You have Rojas at short. Gavin Lux coming off the bench. But do you think there's a world where, let's say Gavin Lux continues to struggle with his confidence and you're starting to see him continue to play a little shaky at second, do you think there's a world where maybe they option him to AAA to start the season to kind of get his confidence back and almost make sure he's right before they give him an opportunity? Or do you think that's not under any consideration right now?
Well, I think the Dodgers and the organization would say, we're going to do whatever is best for the team, number one, and whatever is best for the player, but the team comes first. And it's almost an option that you don't want to think about, but it's happened before. For his own confidence, I hope it doesn't happen. And for his own confidence, I hope that he gets up to a very hot start. He can play and make the routine plays. He can turn it off play. He can make that throw from the outfield on the balls in the gap and balls down the right field line. But that would be a tough thing to do to a player like that. But, again, as happened before, we just hope that it doesn't get to that point, because we know confidence-wise, that'll really be a shaker for Gavin Lux.
Yeah, my hope is that, and you've heard players talk about this that have had throwing issues, that sometimes a play here, a play there, everything just kind of starts to click into place. And do you think that's something that could happen for Lux?
It is, because, I mean, I was there before. It happened to me before in my latter years playing shortstop. You know, I had a hard time sometimes doing the short flip from shortstop to second base, and it gets to your head, and you get the yips. But with him, and how I got over it was saying, you know what, and just let the game be the game, as Mookie Betts like to say, and follow your natural ability. And a game that you got to remind yourself a lot, I've been playing this game for how long now? And my best times were when I wasn't thinking. Well, he's got to get to the point where not thinking, just react and trust what he had, because there's a lot of guys around big league, superstars, have that type of ability, and they'll develop it only because they did not allow themselves to overthink it. What happened with them?
For sure. And look, a little adversity is good for a team, right? I mean, this team wasn't going to go 162-0 in the regular season, win all 11 postseason games, okay? It's not all sunshine and rainbows. But like, getting back to kind of what this team did in the offseason, I want to ask you some questions about, of course, the great Shohei Ohtani. It's kind of crazy to do a Dodgers podcast and be like 20, 30 minutes in, not talk about Ohtani, but this is where we are. Do you like him batting second in the lineup, though, Jose?
I like batting second. You and I had this conversation a long time ago. There's no need to interrupt anything that you have between Mookie, Shohei, Frey, Will Smith, Muncy, Teoscar, because that is a great flow. And for Freddie Freeman, that to me is the best pure hitter on this team. Well, let him have more opportunities with guys with speed in front of him and with guys that are going to take pitches in front of him, because there's no doubt we might see the best season ever from Freddie Freeman, I think, batting third. And I use it. Just leave it the way it is, knowing that Freddie himself is going to feed the guys following him. But a 1-2 like that, you know, beyond the MVP talks and all that stuff that we talk about, we talk about ability to work counts, to hurt you with one swing. And then as the lineup turns around, there's going to be more opportunities even for Freddie Freeman, because these guys are going to go out there and take their walks. I'm talking about Mookie and about Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, when Ohtani was at the plate in Anaheim and he had runners on base around 40% of the time, that was around below league average. Now he's going to have more opportunities. And then kind of talk about the protection, because of course he was playing with the best player in the league. Mike Trout did have some injuries during certain stretches. But do you think that we could see his best years at the plate when you consider he's batting in between two perennial MVP candidates, two of the best hitters in the league in Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman?
I do agree with you on that. Shohei Ohtani has not ever been around a lineup and a group of guys and a grouping of guys like this before. Now, what he has to take into consideration is he got into the National League. Nothing's going to change. You know, I've heard this conversation from people like, well, you know, he's coming from the National League now. You know what? Baseball is pretty much integrated all throughout. He's played every single team in the National League throughout his career. He's played in every single ballpark pretty much, missing one or two, like Wrigley. But he'll do that very soon. But he understands the game so well, studies the game so well that look at the walk rate ratio and rate throughout his career. Look at the strikeouts. Shohei puts it in front of himself to say, there's some things that I need to get better. And then putting up those two guys, how many more hittable pitches will I see and how much can I take advantage of that? This guy's going to make an adjustment. I think overall he could have bigger numbers than he ever had with the Angels. And I know that for sure he is hungry for more to take it to the next level. And now he's going to feed up watching these guys too, which is an important point. It's not just about Shohei himself what he's done, but he pays so much attention to everybody and the way they get ready. That's why he learned from Trout and from Pujols and other guys that were around him to go, wow, this is how they get it done. And he was able to take it to another level. But it just, to me, it's almost like a caricature, like a cartoon character out there saying, this guy plays the game in such a way that sometimes it comes too easy, but believe me, he's paying attention. He is never satisfied. And more than anything, Doug, I'll say it again. I'll say it throughout his career. This guy's got a feel of what it's like to win on a consistent basis. And you just never know what that might bring to a player and his ability to put up even bigger numbers.
Yeah, and that's what I'm excited to see is Shohei Ohtani on a winning club. I think it's going to be contagious. I think it's going to be addicting for him to achieve that level of success. And you've seen him in the past. I mean, really, he doesn't have very many deficiencies at all. I mean, sometimes you see him chasing, but I think that has to do with not seeing as many good pitches. I think he's going to get more pitches to hit than he ever has in his career. Now, as far as winning the MVP this season, of course, he's not going to be in the field. He's not going to be pitching. He's not going to be playing the outfield, even though he's walking around with that really cool mitt out at spring training. So he's going to be your DH. But do you think that maybe he could do something really special this season, like a 40-40 season, like a 50-60 home run year that puts him into that conversation?
Shohei's going to be in the conversation, I think, because of who he is and what he's done already, having won it twice. And then being surrounded by these guys, I mean, it could be that he makes people think twice about, okay, I'm not pitching, so we're not going to consider that aspect of me now as an MVP. But now as a DH, you cannot ignore it. I think people sometimes just perceive this DH thing as, yeah, okay, he's only hitting, he's not contributing anything. But, you know, I'm down the Hall of Fame and voters and those people could be kind of change your minds about Edgar Martinez and Dave Ortiz. These guys didn't create these positions, okay?
Yeah.
But it is a position that, if you don't produce, you're not going to have a job. It's not given to you. And now there's a lot of guys that have tried and maybe thinking, I can prolong my career in the DH. And Doug, it just does not work out for everybody because you got to have the mentality, the ability, the makeup, and the patience to wait for the at-bats and to not overdo it between at-bats too, because you can get into a flow of, over-swinging or taking more swings than you need to or even more striking than you need to and get out of the flow of the game. The best DHs, you'll see, will stay on the bench, will come out, do enough stretching, get loose, but always are in the flow of the game. And Shohei has done that now because he's got practice doing that as a pitcher on the mound and also as a hitter watching pitchers as he DHs.
Absolutely. It's so exciting to think about him in this lineup. And just kind of outside of that 1, 2, and 3, we're calling him the MV3. I don't know if you like the nickname, the MV3. But outside of that, you got a lot of talent, right? You got Smith, you got Muncy, but Teoscar Hernandez, he's the guy that I'm so excited to see this season. He's been hitting the ball hard all spring. He's the lefty masher that they absolutely needed to get this offseason. What can you tell us about Teoscar Hernandez and how excited are you about him heading into this year?
Teoscar has had that smile since the day he signed with the Dodgers and has not been erased at all. I had conversations with him leading into his signing and then with his signing when he was in the Dominican. And he actually started playing and taking pitches at like an adult league because he was so eager to get going. Wow. He went out there and stood and saw a couple pitches. And what he watched him the at-bats. I remember first at-bat of spring in Peoria. Bases loaded. Two strikes. He waits for a pitch from Joe Musgrove and just works him and works him and works him. Gets a hanging breaking ball and gets a two-run double. That's just an example of what he is able to do. And also, Doug, remember that when the Dodgers approach somebody with a free agent, they know the deficiencies. They know what happened last year hitting in Seattle. They got into his head a little bit more. But they didn't bring that up to say, well, what happened? It's more like, no, we saw what you changed when you were playing in Seattle. Let's correct that and have you just flowing in the same direction, same wavelength for 162, 150, whatever it is. So carry that here. Don't worry about home or road. We know he can hit lefties, and he has shown why. He keeps the bat in the zone for a long time, understands when to start, when to stop, very short approach to the baseball, and powerful whip through the zone. And what I like about him is, you know, also getting to the point now where he's talking to him mentally, understands that walks are a good thing. And sometimes, because, again, he's going to be in this top of the lineup, a walk is as good as a base hit because you continue the flow, you see better pitches, and you learn more about the guy on the mound. And at the same time, you're helping the people around you because they're going to be more productive because of your patience too.
Yeah, and I look at what he did in that Toronto Blue Jays lineup a couple years ago with Vladdy and Bichette, how good he was, how much he raked. I get like NLCS MVP vibes from him. You know, sometimes he goes NLCS MVPs that are not the big three, right? He feels like someone who can go on a heater and just carry a lineup. That's how talented he is. And to think that he could be your number six hitter really just speaks to the depth and the talent up and down this lineup. Another new signing, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. So a couple quick questions about Yamamoto is, look, we know this guy, one of the best pitchers on the planet. He dominated the second best league in the world in the NPB. Their hitting quality isn't as good as the majors. A little bit of a dead ball era. I'm not asking for a sub-2 ERA from Yamamoto, but Jose, in your eyes, what does he need to do? What's the biggest key for him to be an ace in the show in year one?
Keep killing the zone because that's not going to change. Now, the quality of the strikes is something that he's going to have to deal with because now, as you mentioned, the lineup he's going to be facing are going to be much deeper than when he plays over there in Japan. But you cannot get away, if you're Yoshinobu, from knowing what your strengths are, which is at times being able to blow a fastball by somebody, but it's all based on how you sequence pitches before that and how you prepare yourself to approach the at-bat. He can be very efficient to out of the zone, Doug, and let me tell you, I saw it in Japan, I talked to his teammates, I watched bullpens in Japan when I was there, and boy, he's got like a program set up for him to go through a lineup and know exactly which details he needs to exploit and which strength he needs to go, sometimes even get away from. Yoshinobu Yamamoto has not shown yet in spring training everything that he has. And that's something that Japanese pitchers, a lot of them do and save some things for later, knowing that coming into a new situation, you have all the videos, you have all the scouting, all the reports and analytics and breakdowns, but there's something in you that you know that is going to be developing throughout the season, and you save just a little bit more. Give you an example. Shohei Ohtani, when he was pitching in Japan, you know, he didn't show miles an hour sometimes until June, July. And people are like, whoa, because of the program they have and how they prepare from spring training onto the regular season, there's always a little bit more in the tank. Another difference here too, Doug, is, and people talk about this, in Japan, for example, spring training, these guys are making 100 pitches in bullpen session. They come here and it's all changed and adjusted and you know, cut down to, you know, 35, 50. I remember Shohei's first bullpen at Tempe. He makes like 35 pitches. They're like, you're done. He's like,
They throw.
So all those things go into play. And here's something, too. I saw it happen recently in one of his outings. In Japan, they're allowed to throw between innings, too. When their team's hitting, and I saw this happen, they're allowed to throw and get loose and stay loose. So all these things are going to be new to him. But going back to your question, the thing is, be yourself. Your stuff is going to play well in the big leagues. And understand that it doesn't hurt to go back and look at what a guy like Senga does and how he based a very solid year on coming to New York and pitching with a team that was expected to do more and how successful he was, for what reason. He did not stay away from this, man. Now, that thing, number one, is nasty to play for a guy like Shinobu. He might be first pitch, one of them is going to vary from the second and third. Well, you might see from him one outing if you're Padre or the Giants or the D-backs or Colorado in that division. It's going to change from what you see later on in the year because he's got the ability to change so many things, but he should never stop from throwing strikes because that is one thing that's going to get him to that level where he is right now.
Yeah, I feel like that was the big difference between his first start and his second start. The command wasn't as pristine as we've seen it. And, of course, he had defense behind him. The defense wasn't good. Max Muncy could have turned that double play. It would have ended that inning. Gavin Lux, same thing. I mean, that's another thing, too, with the left side's infield. I don't want any of these other guys that have some durability issues, guys adjusting to this new league, to throw more pitches and more innings. So that's kind of another problem with having defense that's a little substandard. But it's funny that you say that about Yoshinobu Yamamoto because when I was there for that live BP session, he gets done with it, and he's looking around like, that's it. I'm ready to go. Like, he was ready to throw more pitches, ready to keep it going. And then you know about the spring trainings in Japan. It's very different how they prepare for the season. And that's really cool to hear from you, just the adjustment start to start, team to team. I think maybe you see more sweeper. Maybe you try to – I think there's going to be little tweaks. But like you said, it's all about strike one and that fastball, just the run that it has on it, pound the zone, and then you can get the chase. It's going to be interesting to me. Do the hitters chase at his stuff out of the zone? They were laying off it a little bit in his second start, but his stuff's nasty. Also, Kuroda, a couple years ago, not having that familiarity, you saw him have success. How much of a factor is that, just the lack of familiarity from the opposing hitters in year one, the advantage that's going to be for him?
It is an advantage. You as a guy that doesn't know, haven't seen him, you haven't gauged anything on him. There's no history at this big league level. You're always intrigued as to what really is going to play, how the ball's going to play, approaching the last 30 feet there in front of you. What you do as a hitter is, okay, you try to simplify and say, okay, I need a swing of strikes. But now here's another thing. The best pitchers in the world are going to make a lot of balls look like strikes, okay? And that's the difference between you committing to swing and taking a pitch. A lot of times, if you're too patient with guys like this, before you know it, it's 0-1. Foul ball 0-2, and now you're going, oh, okay, well, now he's got five different things to work with me to put me away. So your mentality is always, let's be a little bit more aggressive early, which, again, if you're Yoshinobu, you're going to say, that could be my advantage too, because if I sense that somebody's going to be aggressive early, I can pitch off the margins of home plate and get myself and steal a strike. And another pitch, I'll tell you what, he's going to steal a lot of strikes, remember this, with that bending breaking ball that he throws over for a strike, steals a strike. It doesn't have any velocity, but tremendous spin and rotation. And from that, he can work on both sides of the play, different angle and view level hitter. But he's got a lot to work with. Now, as I mentioned with Mookie Betts, there will be some growing pains. There will be some outings where he's going to question himself, as in, do I belong here? It happened at Shohei Ohtani. And I saw a nice little dugout on the field watching Shohei shaking his head going, man, I don't know. He's walking a bunch of people. Shohei had a walk in him. Basically, hard time throwing strikes because guys were laying up. So he learned, why am I giving these guys so much credit? Strike one, no matter what. And I'll tell you a quick story about Shohei. You know his cut fastball? Again, he had Kurt Suzuki. And I'm next to the dugout. I'm watching. I'm going, wait a minute. What's the discussion over there? Before you know it, we're watching the TV screen. I'm the analyst out on the field. And I'm going, that's not a slider. That is not his two-seamer. That's a cutter that he just implemented the inning before and talking to Kurt Suzuki. After the game, I asked Kurt Suzuki, his catcher, and said, oh, yeah, he just said, let's try this inning. Before you know it, he has a cutter. Those guys think like that because they trust and they work on it. They perfect it, but also they study it very well.
That is exciting stuff. And we have seen him steal strikes with that rainbow curveball, that little yo-yo curveball early on. He can even work that splitty up in the zone if he wants to steal strikes early in counts. Yeah, we're calling it Yamamania here at Dodgers Nation. That's what we want to see in year one. So much excited about him. So we'll get you out of here on this one, Jose. This team, these expectations, it's World Series. This team is expected to go deep and just not just get there, but win the whole thing. But you got to win in the regular season first, right? You got to go through this process. What is something that you're hoping to see from this team early on this season?
Urgency. And the fact that you're going to play in April, like it's September, you don't want to think about September saying we should have played with this urgency in April, because yes, it is a long season. We hear the cliche all the time, but if you set yourself around as a team, a mentality and a tempo and a feeling that this is who we are from the very first series, the whole thing is going to remember that. You're going to remember that as a team, knowing that you will hit your best stretches. Like they did last year, the meeting with Rojas in Kansas City and the bad series, but bring it immediately, know who you are, and do not get away from who you are, because the worst thing that can happen is the cheer win in April, which will not happen by overdoing it, overthinking it, not trusting the people around you. You become a unit by the way you play, and the way you play, you simplify by knowing who you're surrounded by, how deep your roster is, but don't try to win a World Series in April, because nobody's going to give you a flag or a pin or anything like that. But play the game like urgency, and those games in April mean a whole lot more. When teams see that, they know that you're all about business.
I love that. And the sense I get from this team is, look, they're always filled with high character guys, winners, MVPs, all-stars, but it just feels like there's that little extra urgency this year. I think the early series, the expectations, what's happened the last couple of years, I think all those are factors, but love what I'm seeing about this group. There's no reason to think anything else other than a World Series is going to happen for this year's team. And Jose, we thank you so much for joining us. Guys, if you have Instagram, go to your Instagram right now. If you're not following him already, it's JoseMota05. Also on the X, follow him on both social media platforms. Also, look for his fire content on our own page here at Dodgers Nation, the More with Mota series, an inside look at Dodger baseball. Yeah, always. I thought you were going to jump in there.
More will come.
Yeah.
No, more will come. Oh, yeah.
More is coming with Jose Mota. We might get his dad, Manny Mota, on this year, but he's from the legendary Mota family, of course. Former big leaguer, Dodgers analyst, Mr. Jose Mota. No one knows more about Major League Baseball or Los Angeles Dodgers than this man right here. We thank you so much for joining us. As always, Jose, we'll join you. We'll catch up with you as the season begins. And thank you so much, as always, join us here on Dodgers Dugout Live.
Good pleasure to you.
All right, thanks, Jose. Catch up with
what
you soon.
What up, Dodgers Nation? D-Mac here. I'm here to remind you that if you have not yet, be sure to...
And that's going to do it for this episode of Dodgers Dugout Live, guys. But let us know down below in the comment section, what do you think the Dodgers should do with the shortstop position? Do you want to see them go out there and possibly try to make a trade for a Willy Adames? Do you think that Mookie Betts could be the long-term option at short? Do you want to see Rojas? Do you want to see Kike or Chris Taylor? But a couple more. We got the No One Hangs On with the World Series 2025, Lemon 818. Awesome. That is going to do it, guys, for this episode of Dodgers Dugout Live. My name is Doug McCain. You can follow me on X and Instagram at DMAC_LA. Just 8 days away from opening day, I'll be leaving for Korea on Thursday, and I'm going to be keeping you guys locked in. So tap in here on Dodgers Nation. Follow us at Dodgers Nation on the X, on Instagram. We're going to be doing vlogs. We're going to do live streams, pregame, postgame. We got you covered in Korea, so be sure to follow us for all things Dodger baseball as the Dodgers open their series in Seoul, Korea against the San Diego Padres. But that's going to do it, and remember, nothing brings us together quite like Dodger baseball. And until next time, think blue, bleed blue, and I'm out.